Am I on here? There we go. It's great to see you guys. Noelle, thanks for that moment of surrender. How many of you in that moment are like, man, just what I've wanted, a moment to surrender? There's something within us, right, in that moment that's like, yeah, I don't know that I like this. Don't know that I want this. But it's very necessary for many of us because, as we all know, as life happens to us, sometimes some things that may reside deep within begin to come out and begin to reveal themselves. And maybe for some of us, we look at that and we go, I don't know that I like that. That's not exactly what I thought. And so I thought I'd begin this morning with just like a little, what would you do? Okay. So yeah, you like that? No, everybody's like, no, I got to go get some coffee. I'm out of here. No, what would you do? So for example, let's say you've got a building project at your house, but you know you've got a nosy neighbor who the neighbor is going to call the city on you or report you. I can speak to this from experience, yes. Yes, I can speak from experience on this. What would you do if you know, what are you going to do? You know that neighbor's going to call on you. What would you do? Would you, yeah, I'm just throw it out there. Ignore them, okay. Anybody else? Confront them, okay. Well, I've got an option for you here. Put this picture on the screen. This is what one guy did. If you can't see this, it says, Larry, I have a permit and the permit number. So he put a big sign outside his house to say, I've got a permit. Okay, let's say another, what would you do? You go to the store, you go to Hy-Vee, Walmart, Target, wherever you go, and we've all seen this. You got that person, I was going to say idiot, but they're made in the image of God. They're not an idiot. They just, but they park wrong. They double park over the line. What would you do? Pray for them. Oh, that's the good answer right there. Good. Now somebody give me the real answer as far as what would you do?
Say bad things about them.
You say bad things? What was somebody else saying? Oh, well, you must have seen the next picture then, because here's an option for what you could do, which I think is amazing. Or you could do this. Go to the next. I thought that was equally good. Okay, let's go back to the neighbor. The neighbor is like on you. Obviously, you've got problems with your neighbor. Your neighbor says you need to paint your fence. What would you do? Nothing. Ignore the neighbor. Okay, paint it green.
Invite them to do it.
Invite them to do it. Very good answer. Let's see what this person did. Look, Bob, I painted my fence. So evidently, yeah.
That's funny.
That is good. Okay, I'm going to prepare you for this next one. There is a picture. It's not exciting. You're going to moan when I show it to you. You have a roommate. You have to share a shower. But you know the shower, it always gets clogged. My roommate has this problem as well. I can look down and I can see it. And you've asked your roommate to clean the drain. What would you do? You just want to see the picture now, don't you? Go ahead and show the picture. That's my favorite picture right there. Usually I don't get a response out of Ryan. I was showing Ryan these this week, and he's like, oh, my gosh. Oh. So he was, I know that's a good one. That's, you know, okay, one more for you. You're in a neighborhood, this, you know, neighbor theme here. You're in a neighborhood, and you have kids. You live next door to the Clarks, let's just say. And often, as will happen, the balls from the Clark's yard or the Frisbees end up in your yard. What would you do? Just throw them back over. Most everybody said, just throw them back over. Not a big deal. Here's a good picture. This guy throws them up in a tree so that they can't be retrieved.
Oh, no.
I do have to admit, this was my favorite solution ever. So, you know, these are a bit funny and true, obviously, because, you know, nothing would be false on the internet. So it has to be true. And that, as funny as these may be, but when we change a little bit and we go to real life scenarios, it kind of changes and we stop laughing. So for example, let's say you're in a grocery store and somebody in a hurry runs by you and clips you down the aisle. Just kind of runs into you and just keeps going. Doesn't say sorry, doesn't do anything. Just, what would you do? Yeah? Yeah? I like the boldness there. But let's change the scenario. Let's say you're there with your child, and they knock your child over. Mothers, what would you do? Dads, we're just like, it ain't bleeding, get up, you're fine. I'm just, you know. Or let's just change this a little bit more. What if it was your elderly parent and they knocked them to the ground that required medical assistance? We just got, that just took a dark turn, didn't it?
Yeah.
And we could go on with another example of what about the careless driver who, you know, is not paying attention and hits your car. And you're fine, your car's dinged up, you know the hassle of working with insurance, it's a pain, but what do you do there? You're upset, you're agitated, but you're like, okay, I can move on. But let's say you're in that accident and something happens to you and then they have to take you to the hospital with a concussion or something. That's a little different scenario. Or even as we've had people at Ashworth before who have shared, been hit by a careless drunk driver that caused the death of a grandchild. What do you do? It's challenging, right? Well, I just want you to know that the song about surrender and that moment of surrender is exactly where we need to be today, because as we continue to talk about the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus is saying to us, this is the most difficult, the most radical, the most challenging words that you are going to hear. And it should cause you to pause and think, and it should cause you to pause and reevaluate, because what we're going to be talking about today is revenge and love. And we could have gone on and just thought about all the situations, even in our world, that have happened over the last 18 months. For example, COVID. Anybody have a response or reaction to COVID? What about George Floyd? What about the election? What about the collapse of that building in Florida? Anybody have emotions over that, just thinking, how could that happen? And let's don't forget, probably the most upsetting thing is that Tom Brady won another Super Bowl. I mean, we all have these emotional reactions. Life happens around us, and life happens to us. And the question is, what do we do with that? So let's just look and see, what did Jesus have to say to us? We're going to be in Matthew chapter 5. And let's just read his words. We're going to have two passages today. We're going to start with the revenge one. Jesus says, "You've heard that it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." You know, these may be some of the most famous expressions from the Bible that people know. You've heard those. Turn the other cheek. Go the extra mile. Give them the shirt off your back. We're all familiar with these expressions, and they all come from Jesus. So what exactly is Jesus saying here? Well, we're to the antithesis, these statements that Jesus is making where he says, you've heard it said this, but I'm going to change it. I'm going to add to it. I'm going to deepen it. I'm going to reshape how you think about this. And so we're in the final two antithesis statements. And so we know that Jesus jumps back into the Old Testament to bring something forward when he says, "You know, I know that you've heard it said." And so what is Jesus bringing forward? Well, the first one is Exodus 21. And just look at this, because it should make us go, wow, just a little bit. It says, if people are fighting and hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, but there's no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. Now, fascinating, right? We didn't leave a lot of room, and notice it said you must. There's a must in there. This is an establishment of a law that says here's what must occur if offense takes place. And this isn't the only one. There's one in Leviticus 24 we're not putting up there, but there's another one in Deuteronomy 19. And look at what this one says. It says, if a malicious witness takes the stand to accuse someone of a crime, the two people involved in the dispute must stand in the presence of the Lord before the priest and the judges who are in office at the time. The judges must make a thorough investigation, and if the witness proves to be a liar, giving false testimony against a fellow Israelite, watch this, then do to the false witness as that witness intended to do to the other party. You must purge evil from among you. Did you catch that? You must purge evil from among you. The rest of the people will hear this and be afraid, and never again will such an evil thing be done among you. show no pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Three times in the Old Testament, we see this exact terminology come in. What in the world is going on? Well, this is the law of retaliation, or the Latin is called lex talionis, which is basically the problem that they're trying to address is overcompensation for the offense. So if you drive your car over to my house and run over my favorite cow, what this law was trying to do is to prevent Brent, who is very angry and can be a hothead, from jumping in his car and driving over to your house and plowing down every cow in your field and then resting my car in your living room. They would say that's a step too far. And so this law of retaliation was meant to stop this, to rein in vengeance, to stop inappropriate punishment, and it was meant to be even-handed justice, that no matter who you were, if this happened, then this happened. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't understand this. I can understand why this needed to be in place because I know how I react sometimes. If somebody flies past me down the road or I see somebody blow through a red light, I will admit my prayer in that moment is, God, I hope there's a cop somewhere. I mean, I don't have to do it myself, but I'm hoping somebody does it. I have a justice part of me that just craves that. And it's like, you've done wrong. You can't do that. You got to be stopped. So I understand why this law of retaliation had to be. But the problem Jesus is continuing to address, as we've seen for weeks, is that the laws are good in the sense that they can try to prevent behavior. But not one of these laws can ever change the heart. It can never change what's inside in order to make you not want to desire to do that for somebody. Yeah, the law can say, yeah, they slapped you, so you get to slap them back. You don't get to slap them and hit them and kick them. Great. But it still doesn't change anything within me. It still doesn't change my interaction with you or how I think or feel about you. And so, I don't know about you, but as I read this, I'm very convicted because I do have those thoughts that come into my head when things happen, or the words that sometimes come out of my mouth, or even, God help us, the things we type on social media that come through us, the actions of reacting because of what somebody's done. It's so convicting. And really, is there anything better to reveal what's in our hearts than how we respond in that moment when something happens to us? And Jesus gives us these crazy examples that we're familiar with. You may have heard them before. I just talked about them. The first one begins with, turn the other cheek if anyone slaps you. And Jesus here is talking about a physical slap, but he's really not talking about the physicalness of the slap. What Jesus is talking about here is a slap with the back of the hand. This was the reason I say it's not a physical infliction of physical pain, because, yeah, this would hurt, but if I'm wanting to hurt you by hitting you, how am I going to do it? I'm going to close my fist, and I'm going to come right for your nose, right? You know, there are other ways to inflict physical pain. This right here in the first century was an insult. It was insulting your dignity. It was insulting your character. It was insulting you as a person. And so what Jesus is saying is that you're going to endure insults. And what are you supposed to do when you endure insults? Jesus says, turn the other cheek. Now, I've realized today, if we were making this statement, it might not make sense for us to say, if somebody hits you, turn the other cheek. But where might we be insulted? Where might we experience the metaphorical slap of the back of the hand? And then when we think about that, what is it that, or how is it that we respond in that moment? You see, because that's what Jesus is referring to. How often do we see an insult on television and then we begin to see insult traded for insult or on social media? And what Jesus is trying to tell us here is that this is human nature. You're always going to want to react. You punched me in the face, I want to punch you back. You insult me, you say something about me on social media, guess what? I'm going to say something about you on social media. And Jesus is saying, hold on. This is going to begin a spiral that never ends. It's the unending spiral of violence. And as kingdom people, we've got to be the ones to put a stop to it. He keeps going, though, because if that wasn't enough, he then talks about being sued. We're talking about positions of power. And he says if somebody asks for your shirt or your cloak, you give them your coat or your tunic. To understand this, you have to realize that people basically had very little clothing back then. You had your tunic and your cloak, and that's what you wore. And he's saying if somebody wants your tunic, yeah, you give it to them, but then you take your cloak, your outer garment, the thing that was required for your life, because this is what kept you warm in the evenings, and this was everything. And Jesus is saying, no, go ahead and give this to them. What's interesting here is as you study into this, there's no real consensus as what Jesus might have been saying. There's a couple of things. One commentator talked about how by giving them your cloak, it was more shameful to cause somebody's nakedness than to be naked, if that makes sense. So by giving them the cloak, you're taking the shame and putting it on them for being that way. That's one option. I don't know that I necessarily jump right into that. But he's talking about these things maybe also that we might be clinging to too tightly, the things we're holding on to, and he's saying, what are we unwilling to let go of when people are against us and insulting us? He talks then about going the extra mile. At this time when the Romans were oppressing the Jewish people, it was a common understanding that a Roman soldier could come alongside you and say, hey, carry my gear. And as a citizen or somebody who the Roman soldiers were over, you had no choice. You picked up the pack. But the law said you only had to go 1 mile. And when you went 1 mile, you could set the pack down and be like, out. But Jesus is saying, go the extra mile. They may force you. And notice the word force. He talks about they force you to go 1 mile. There's nothing you can do about that. But then he says, beyond that, you choose to go the second mile. That's crazy. We think, I'm going to do my duty and turn around and go home. But Jesus, again, is saying, look, yeah, there's a forced thing that may happen to you, but go beyond that. There's something about being in the kingdom that says, I can do that. I can go the extra mile. It's not an insult to me. And the witness I can have as a kingdom citizen might speak volumes more when I go that second mile rather than just setting it down and going home. The fourth instruction he talks about is giving. He says, give to the one who asks you. So right now, I'm going to ask you all to give me $100. My Venmo is at the Brent Clark. So go ahead, pull out those phones. I don't see any phones moving. You guys aren't doing what Jesus said. But we see sometimes how when we go right into Scripture, it's kind of goofy, right? Sometimes we want to be literal about everything Jesus said. Is that what he's saying, that we should give everything we have away? No, Jesus is using hyperbole in each of these instances to make his point. He's done this before in the sermon. He's doing it again. And as he uses this hyperbole, what he's wanting us to see is two things. Number one is there's a better way. That there's a better way in the kingdom than what we currently are experiencing right now. And in the kingdom, it says, I don't have to assert myself. I don't have to be worried about, well, what do you think about me? Am I standing up for myself? Am I, living out, defending myself all the time? And Jesus says, you don't have to do that. Because when you're in the kingdom and you know who you are and you know whose you are and you know what Jesus says about you, then you're not worried about what happens when somebody insults you. You're like, psh, I don't care. Jesus says I'm great. And when somebody sues you and tries to take advantage of you and you go, okay, that's fine. My Father owns it all anyway and I've got it. It's fine. Or you look at going the extra mile. There's nothing you can force me to do that I might not already be willing to do for you. Why? Because I know who I am. I know who my Father is, and I know that there's a better way in the kingdom of God. And even though the lex talionis was there to prevent all this retaliation, it was good. I mean, multiple civilizations used that similar of a concept to rein in vengeance and that cycle of violence. Because, you know, if you've heard it, maybe heard it said, violence begats violence. Gandhi was known as saying, if it's eye for eye, eventually the whole world will be blind. And there's truth to that. And Jesus is saying, look, there's a better way. But we have to trust Jesus in that moment that what he means is real. And we have to know that, okay, is there a better way? But am I going to trust Jesus to live in that better way? But the second thing I think I know Jesus is saying here is not just that there's a better way than don't revenge people or revenge against people, but he's also saying, stop being so literal. Stop looking for a new law to replace the old law. And that, I think, is the other turn of this that we as humans fall into. We're here, well, it says eye for an eye. Well, Jesus says turn the other cheek. So I'm going to write a new set of laws that says I will do this. And by doing so, we create some very tricky circumstances for us to try to navigate. And we easily could turn this section of Scripture into an abuser's dream. Because as a Christian woman in an abusive relationship, wouldn't an abusing man just love to hear or throw the words at you? Yeah, I just beat you down. But Jesus said, turn the other cheek. That is not what Jesus is saying. That is not what this is about. We are not called to just simply suffer at the hands of someone without defending ourselves. But the problem is, and you may have caught this, and when we read the passage, Jesus makes this expression. He says, do not resist an evil person. What in the world is he talking about? Because at face value, you would just assume it says, okay, you hit me again. I'm just going to let you beat me until I die. Is that what he's talking about? No. God is not calling us to be passive victims of other people's hostility. He's also not calling us to shoot people and burn them to the ground, okay? Let's put some guidelines in here. But he's not saying that you have to be a victim for what anybody ever wants to do with you. Because we need to remember that we would assume that this verse right here is talking about passively accepting everything that comes your way. But remember, everything we've been looking at for the past 3 weeks has less to do with our behavior and more to do with our heart. Who are you? It's how we resist. Do not resist, followed by all these illustrations, are simply a way for us to evaluate our hearts. When we have the opportunity for retaliation, what do you do? Do you demand your rights or do you lay them down? Are you willing to lay down your rights for the good of someone else? This isn't about being a doormat. In fact, one of the things I read this week said it's not about being a doormat, it's about being an anvil. An anvil. Do you guys know what that is? It's what you beat metal on. What is it talking about? Charles Spurgeon, a famous, well-known pastor, he used this analogy when he said, we are to be as the anvil when bad men are the hammers. Resistance is one thing, retaliation is another. Jesus challenged the high priest. Paul challenged Peter, but what Jesus is saying here is how we resist. We are not to be revengeful, vengeful people going out to settle the score. That has to be taken off the table. But we can resist, we can challenge, we can push back, but the question is, how are we going to do that? Are we going to do it in the same way that it's been done to us? If that's the case, then no. And the other side of this is, what is the motivation? What is driving your resistance? Is it anger? Then it's wrong. Is it justice? Then okay. But if our desire is to make someone pay and to make them hurt, then we've gone over the line. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. What we need to be is people of inner strength who know who we are in Christ. We have nothing to prove to ourselves or others. We are self-controlled. We have a love for others so powerful that revenge and retaliation never cross our minds. That's the love of Jesus is so embedded within our hearts that even when somebody cuts us off in traffic, we go, oh, I need to pray for that person. Not, I want to run them down with my car. There's a huge, huge difference. And Jesus is saying, where's your heart? Where is your heart? Let's jump to the second part here. We don't have much time. Sorry, I get going. Jesus continues the Sermon on the Mount. And he says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? And not even the tax collectors doing that. And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that. Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Love your enemies. Now we see how these two things can come together. Because when that person cuts you off in traffic, when that neighbor turns you in or rats on you for a permit in your neighborhood, you know, what do? Jesus says we're to love our enemies. Now, what's interesting about this, Jesus says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. Interestingly, Jesus is not actually bringing that from the Old Testament. Love your neighbor, he is. But nowhere in the Old Testament is he bringing forward this law that said you had to hate your enemies. What is he talking about? We all know that it is human nature to circle up with people like us and look to the outsiders as different. It is human nature to gravitate towards people like us, people that look like us, the same race, the same nationality, the same political affiliation, the same financial affluence, the same religion or denomination, the same sexual orientation, the same hobbies, the same causes. And while it's not inherently evil for us to gravitate towards those, what can occur and what we see occurring a lot right now, especially with a high degree of frequency lately, is that we use these things to create differences in classes. Us versus them, insiders versus outsiders, good versus evil, friends versus enemies. For years, I used to make a statement, and Ryan and Amy know this well. I say, nothing brings people together like a common enemy. And that is such a true statement. But for the problem with that, for us who follow Jesus, is we are told we're not to have enemies. We're to love those enemies. That's taking it to a whole new level. Well, what is it that makes someone an enemy? What is it that we could look at someone and say, ooh, you're not on my team? Well, it may be one of the things that was mentioned in the previous passage. Somebody that slaps you, somebody that sues you, somebody that borrows from you, somebody that forces you to do something. Maybe it's somebody that just believes differently than us. But then how do we respond to that? How do we respond to our enemies? You know, usually we think the word hate is the opposite of love, but we know that it's not, because really the opposite of love is apathy. And how do we typically respond to our enemies? By just not caring. We don't give a thought to them, whether they have a need, whether they're in trouble. It doesn't matter. You're my enemy, and so I just don't care. And we move on. We move on. We just give no thought to them. And yet what Jesus is saying here in this moment, and hold on here, is that you are supposed to love President Biden. And you're also supposed to love President Trump. And you're supposed to love the people that voted for each of them. Oh, anybody feel conviction there? I told Ryan about 2 weeks ago, I said, here is my concern. We have reached a level of division in this country and in the church where I don't know that Jesus is even enough to bring us back together. We so focus on the things that divide and we forget the things that brought us together. Who freaking cares who you voted for? Jesus said, love your enemy. And you shouldn't be seeing those people as the enemy anyway. Jesus says we're to love Black Lives Matter. Jesus says we're to love the Proud Boys. Jesus says we love Muslims and Hindus and Catholics and God, yes, even the Lutherans down the street. Jesus said, you're supposed to love the Chicago Cubs. And Amy, you're supposed to love the St. Louis Cardinals. I know that's a challenge. And here's the thing. We throw out this word love, and we think, okay, well, I'll think positive thoughts, and I will, in my mind, care about them. Good God, can we destroy a word any worse than we've destroyed the word love in our culture? Love is not an ushy-gushy feeling. Love is modeled in God and what he has done for us and to us, and it is self-giving. Jesus uses the word here, agape, divine love, the love that God has for us. And that type of love is a self-giving love, seeking the good of others. And too often we think we've done something admirable if we tolerate somebody. This isn't toleration. It's seeking their good. And let me just tell you, sometimes the problem is the measuring stick we're using to say, well, I'm okay. You're using the wrong measuring stick, because if you're not measuring yourself up to Jesus, you're looking at the wrong standard. What do I mean? Go back to the first passage. What did Jesus endure for you? He endured the slaps on the face and the ripping out of the beard. And what did he do? He turned the other cheek. When they came after his clothes, he gave them all as he went to the cross and hung on the cross naked in front of the world, shamed for everyone to see. He gave the cloak as well. When they required him to go 1 mile, he went the second mile, all the way to Calvary, all the way to Golgotha, where he died on the cross. And he gave his life for every one of us, even those who were doing this with glee. And he looked out from the cross and he said, "Father, forgive them." You see, Jesus is the example we're to follow. He's the one. Augustine made this statement. He says, "Many have learned how to offer the other cheek, but we don't know how to love him by whom they were struck." You see, what Jesus is talking about here is, what's your motivation? What is in your heart when something happens to you? Again, you don't have to be a doormat. Sometimes the best thing you can do for somebody is tough love. It's still love, but it's tough. Our goal in loving one another is to seek the best out of each one another. And if I see Amy going down a path, sorry, Amy, you sit on the front and we work together. You just get to be the example. But if I see Amy going down a path or doing something that is going to destroy her life, what is the most loving thing I can do? Ignore it? No. Step in. And if Amy's doing something to me that's abusive and is the most loving thing to do for me to take it? No. That's going to increase her ability to continue to abuse. And so the most loving thing I can do is stand up and say, "Enough is enough. I love you so much that I'm going to do whatever it takes for you to become the best version of yourself that you need to be." And it's not just becoming your doormat. It's standing up to you with tough love. That's what Jesus is talking about. And Jesus is the model for that. So there's no application points today, just a challenge, which is this. What is your response when something happens to you? And as much as possible and healthy, how are you following Jesus' most unnatural, radical teaching of loving your enemy? Are you turning your enemies into neighbors? And can we really say that you're showing that love if you haven't done anything for them? Let's pray.